This episode of Story 49 is a story about stories. We all have them. You know, those ones that you tell over and over again sitting around your kitchen table, or while you're on a hike, or while you're at a party. And we have those storytellers too. Those people who just know how to tell a good story. For Lorelai Ivanov, it was her grandmother.
I mean, from day one, I can remember her telling stories about the first time she made a beaver hat or going out by dog sled up the Unalakleet River Valley. And there was a wolf and no, it was a there's a reindeer in front of them on the trail, and the dogs just went faster. And, you know, seeing that animal, and they just kind of sped up, and she talked about how fun it was. And so she was always a big time storyteller in our family, and I definitely think of her. She allowed you to feel what she was feeling in those moments, which I didn't appreciate then, but looking back, I think, wow, she did that so well. And she wasn't, you know, it was just her being her. So I really appreciate that I was able to feel those moments that my grandma felt when she was a little kid through her stories.
Knowing this power that stories can have, Lorelai, as a member of the Nome Arts Council, teamed up with Matt Rafferty from the Anchorage-based nonprofit Arctic Entries to bring a live storytelling event to Nome a few weeks ago on April 4th.
So Arctic Entries is a live storytelling event in Anchorage that we do once a month, 9 months out of the year, and this is our sixth season. And our mission is that we build community one story at a time. And we just thought it was a great thing to be able to get these awesome stories, because everyone in Alaska has one, out there in the public and for people to share. And that if people share, we think that the world's a better place.
I got both Lorelai and Matt in the studio the day before the event to talk about how this collaboration began.
I remember it was a bunch of years ago. I used to do a bluegrass radio show in Anchorage on KMBA. And I was on my way to the show, and I had to run into Fred Myers and get something or something like that. And I saw Lorelai, and I hadn't seen you in a few years. And so we started chatting. I was like, well, if you got time, you should come down to KMBA tonight. I'm going to be doing my radio show. And you actually showed up. And then we hung out for a couple hours, like in between playing bluegrass music. And you were, I think you had just started working here maybe. You were telling me about story time with Lorelai and how you would just start telling stories.
Yeah, I had a radio show from noon to 2 o'clock, and so during that time there would, you know, every other day or so, whenever I felt like a story came up and I thought it was funny or whatever, I would share a story, and it was kind of story time with Lorelai. And I'd say, okay, now it's story time with Lorelai, and I'd tell the story about my kids doing something goofy or making Valentine's with them or whatever happened, you know, the day before that hit my funny bone. I would share that story. So he knew I was already into storytelling, I guess.
Yeah, and I think right around that time, I think that's maybe when Arctic Entries was just starting in Anchorage or something, and I wasn't involved with it yet, but I think somehow, or maybe that just prompted me to then reach out to you once I started doing the Arctic Entries stuff. I don't remember. I just remember story time with Lorelai, and I was trying to get you to tell a story that night on the air, and I think you did.
I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but I'm pretty sure you did.
And so, they kept in touch and eventually worked together to host the storytelling event that happened a few weeks ago. The goal, 7 people telling 7-minute true stories on the theme food, stories of gathering, traditions, and $18 orange juice. Lorelai began her search for 7 storytellers about a month ago, reaching out to people in Nome who had a story to share, but some people, after hearing about the event, reached out to her too.
You know, they'd stop me at Hanson's and, you know, while I was getting my paper towel or something, and say, I have this story about, you know, when I was growing up and blah, 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 and go into their story.
Through the sharing of these life experiences, Arctic Entries hopes to build community one story at a time.
Well, I think that it's just a way for people to open up and share something about themselves, right? And if you do that, in some way, you're making yourself a little bit more vulnerable, which I think breaks down walls, right? And so I think then people just become more open to each other. And that's why our rule, like, these are true stories, and they're told by the person who experienced them. And so, you know, there's no pretense in that. It's just, it's like a real experience. And I just think that the more people get to know each other as people, the better off we all are, right? And I do think that one of the beautiful aspects of life in Alaska is that there's this notion that we're all in this together, regardless of your view on different issues or, you know, where you come down on any kind of different line. But there's something about helping each other and being there for each other and just being in it together.
When people show their heart or show who they are, share something you know, deeper than just the surface that we see every day at the post office or at the store or, you know, at Alaska Airlines. When you go a little deeper, you do make yourself a little more vulnerable. And there's a beautiful connection somehow made between two human beings when that's shown, I think. And I think any time a person shares something deeper than the surface in a very genuine way, that there's tremendous beauty in that. We're all human beings. We all feel the same things in many ways. And to see that in someone else somehow, I don't know how to describe it. It's a beautiful thing.
But I think you're right, totally, Lorelai, that notion of vulnerability. It's the open of exposing something, like sharing something. The most powerful stories are the ones when people open up in a way that I think the whole audience is kind of a gasp of like, wow, like we're in this together now. Like I'm right with you. So.
After rehearsing the night before the event, a group of 7 local storytellers lined up behind the microphone to share their stories. In the next 50 minutes or so, you'll hear their stories exactly as they were told during the event on April 4th. 7 stories told by 7 local people.
So our first storyteller is just one of these regular guys who moved to Alaska for 3 months, and he has stayed here ever since. It's Rick Anderson.
Okay, thanks. Well, I've been moose hunting with friends many times in the past, and I had gotten out, helped them pack moose, cut moose, the usual. So one cold and dark January day, a friend Roger and I decided we needed to go moose hunting. So we gassed up our snow machines, packed our sleds, got ourselves ready, and headed off for Fish River. About the time we get to Topcock that day, it was already turning pretty dark, so we decide, well, we better camp here for the night. We get down to Topcock and spent that night, and got up not so early the next day, but continued on to Fish River, and down in Fish River country, the snow was really deep, so we were struggling going upriver and getting stuck and pulling each other out and kind of having a good time. So by this point, I'd kind of gotten separated. I was off in front of Roger quite a ways. And driving up the river, going through the trees, and I come upon a small slough. What do I see but a small bull moose standing out there? So I couldn't believe how lucky I was and so excited. So here I am struggling to get my rifle off my back. My parka pulls up over my head. I'm trying to yank it back down, and I kneel down against my sled, take a shot, and down he goes. Oh man, I was excited. So then I look up, and I can't believe it. He's laying in water. So about that time, Roger catches up with me. He doesn't know if he ought to congratulate me or call me a dumb guy for shooting a moose in the water. Well, we knew we had to get out there and get this thing, so we waded through the snow, got into the water, which was, almost knee-deep, and that was about as cold and wet as I have ever been. But we got the thing cut up, skinned, cut up, packed into our sleds, and we knew we really needed to get back to Topcock in the shelter cabin that night. So we pull off our boots, dump them out, wring out our socks, and hit the road. We're on our way to Topcock, and we get to Topcock, and we were both so soaking wet, we could barely get off our snow machines. We kind of pry ourselves off and kind of hobble our way into the cabin. And then we get a fire going and thaw ourselves out. So got some dry clothes on, and later on we made up dinner out of some backstrap out of that moose. And what an adventure that was. And I'll remember my first moose hunt for a long time. Thank you.
Thank you, Rick. All right, way to start it off. So we've got a couple more storytellers. So our next storyteller is only a junior in high school, which is amazing that he's telling a story. And he enjoys sports and the outdoors and video games, but more than anything, he enjoys food. So please welcome Sam Cross.
She said I like food. I mean, in fact, I love food. It's my favorite thing to eat. But yeah, I'll eat almost anything. I mean, you know, vegan ice cream, you name it, I'll eat. Probably because my mom, when I was a baby, she wanted me to be open to a lot of foods, and I am, so it worked. But what she did was she would sort of mix up her diet, you know, she would try not to eat the same thing over and over again, and then whatever food she ate, I would eat, because that's how she fed me. But, yeah. I really like the holidays because of all the food, you know, there's Thanksgiving and Christmas, and Thanksgiving is probably my favorite holiday, probably because there's the most food. And Christmas, there's food, but there's presents too, so, you know. But, yeah, I'm all about Thanksgiving. Well, at least I was until freshman year. I joined wrestling, and unfortunately, the wrestling season runs right through Thanksgiving. And for those of you that don't know, when you're a wrestler, you have to maintain a certain weight. And when I joined, I was weighing about 110, 112. And my coach goes, "Sam?" I was like, "Yeah, coach." He goes, "I want you to wrestle 106. I was like, "Okay, it's like 4 pounds. I got this." I didn't have that, man. It was hard. I mean, I thought that maintaining 4 pounds under my regular weight would be easy, but it wasn't. It was tough, man. And but I was like, you know what? Because I didn't know a whole lot about wrestling. I didn't know about the season, like when it ended and stuff. So I was like, you know what? Thanksgiving, man. That's when I'm gonna go crazy. I'm gonna eat all the food I want. I'm gonna gain all the way back. And you know, like after practice, me and my buddies, we'd be talking like, "Man, can't wait till Thanksgiving. It's gonna be awesome." I'm like, "Well, not really." I'm like, "Why? It's the end of the season. You get to eat whatever you want." They're like, "It's not the end of the season. What are you talking about?" I'm like, "What?" So we have to wait. What? And then they'd be like, "Yeah, you have to not eat a whole bunch so that you don't have to run." I was like, "Oh, man." So Thanksgiving came around, and I decided to foolishly not take the advice of my friends, and I ate everything I could get my hands on. I mean, it was plate after plate after plate. These were big plates, like mountains. But that was so good. Oh, my gosh, that was good. I regretted it, though. I went to practice on Monday, and I weighed 126. Yeah. Yeah. 126, and coach goes, "Sam, what was your weight?" I was like, "Don't worry about it, coach. I'll get it down, Sam. 126. He was not impressed. I was running that whole practice, just running laps. But yeah, next year I learned from my mistakes, and I decided to go easy on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving came around. I was wrestling 113 that year, and I told myself, you know what, let's not have a repeat of last year. It wasn't fun. And so I decided that I wasn't gonna go crazy. And my dad, who was a wrestler when he was in high school, told me that he was gonna sort of help me out. I was like, all right, well, whatever that means. And so Thanksgiving comes around and he said, "Sam, let me see your plate." I was like, okay. So I gave him my plate and he fixed it for me. And he comes back and, well, I wasn't happy. The turkey that I got was about the size of a silver dollar. And my mashed potatoes, what? Have you guys ever seen like a 4-year-old make a snowball? It was about that big. And I had a spoonful of green bean casserole. That was good. But yeah, I was I didn't have the best Thanksgiving. In fact, I was very angry. I was like, this is the climax of my Thanksgiving dinner? It's supposed to be a feast, man. I'm gonna be hungry when I go to bed. Jeez. But I went to practice, and I was actually 2 pounds underweight. I was 111. I was like, wow, that's different. It's weird. And but I still don't really like the fact that I had to not eat a whole bunch. And I decided this year that I wasn't gonna join wrestling. I was like, I like food. No, I'm good. And so I decided that I wasn't gonna join. And then I found out that it was my coach's last year as head coach, and that sort of broke me. So I decided I would join anyways. And so, you know, but I decided in my head, I'm not gonna cut weight. I don't have to. I'm buff. Weighing 130, I got this. And I decided not to cut weight. So I didn't. But I didn't tell my coach yet. And one day at practice, before you can go to your first tournament, you have to get your 10 practices in so that you're eligible. And my 10 practices were coming up, and coach goes, Sam, you're awful heavy. And I was like, well, yeah, I know. He's like, don't you think you ought to get that down? I was like, well, I was thinking I would just wrestle at my weight, if that's okay with you. And he goes, okay. I was like, what? No, you're supposed to make me run laps or something, man. But it didn't happen. I was pretty happy. I had so much fun because my friends were cutting weight and I wasn't, and I was eating all the food I could and they were watching what they were eating. It was so good. It was great. It was awesome. And yeah, it was fun. I can't wait to see how next year turns out.
Sam's hoping to get a dinner invitation from everybody out here tonight, so have this guy over. Maybe next year he can wrestle at like 170 or something, I don't know. our next storyteller is Yayuk Alvana Stimpfel, and we're excited to have her come and tell a story. She grew up on the east end of Nome from her King Island community, and she was taken out on every single hunting trip and berry picking trip and to get greens. Not a hunter? I thought it said hunter. Oh, fish camp. Every fish camp. Sorry about that. And she has a problem. I guess I'll read it because now I'm being held accountable. I was trying to be like all coy. But she's a product of the Nome Public Schools. She was an educator for 25 years. She raised 3 children with her husband, Jim. And now she is raising her granddaughter. So everybody make welcome Yayuk.
Okay, I'm going to cheat a little bit. But the title of my story is Surat Adatni Korjirunga. And by the time I'm done in 7 minutes, you will know what that means. Surat Adatni Korjirunga. This time of the year, our men are very, very busy. I grew up in the King Island community, and they're repairing all of their hunting equipment. They are getting ready with their crew members, all their boats, and making sure everything is in working order, their guns, whatever men use for hunting. And the women folk, on the other hand, this time of the year, they're out tomcodding, get lots of tomcods to clean, dry, and to be used for the spring and summer. So by the time the ice opens up and the sea mammals start migrating, the walrus, the King Islanders are walrus hunters, and they also get uruk, which is a bearded seal, and some seals. And we prize the uruk because it makes the best mizra, it makes the best seal oil. And we get very excited for this time of the year because this is like the start of our Nerepir eating year, preparing year. And if you understood me, that's when we prepare all of our traditional foods, our native foods. And so the very first thing that the women do, I don't know what the men do while they're hunting, but I know what women did because I was raised by my mother and my grandmother and all my aunts. We watch for the willow greens, for the suet that grow when they're little, little shoots. We don't pick them quite yet, so we wait a week, maybe a few more days, have some nice sunny days, and they have to be a certain size. If they get any bigger, they're very, very bitter. But we keep a watch. My mother and my grandmother would pack their mukmon, their traditional backpack that has a strap across. And they put in that new tamkan, our new banyaktok, which is dry meat, and then they would pack, somebody would have an empty coffee can and go by a stream, and lots of suet, lots of greens, nice and fresh, very, we call that time of the year Ora Vuktok. It becomes very green. It's the most beautiful time of the year on the tundra. And I was very, very little. Kol Jirunga. There's no direct translation to English. Kol Jirunga is when you start to Kolzhik, that's when you become aware of your surroundings, who you are, whose family you come from. There's no direct translation to English. So when I started to Kolzhik, I was under some surat. They were above me, really nice, pretty bushes, under some bushes. And I was drinking a bottle. And because you go in and out of being of your korjik, when you're korjik, korjirunga, surat, adatni. So I was under the bushes. And then I'd hear the women folk around me. They inupirak the whole time. You never hear a word of English. And that was my education. That's where my education started, was at on the tundra, under these bushes, drinking my bottle. But so maybe after they would use our oyamieta, you fill it up maybe two or three times full of surah, and you, these are leftover fabrics from our orishkak. I'm wearing orishkak. Maybe some of you have a orishkak. We don't call them kasbuk here. We say orishkak. Okay? And then my mother and my grandmothers, they used to have a flour sack. I actually have one from a long time ago. You fill that up. Surat are the first thing that we pick throughout the summer, very first. So we're on the tundra. Mosquito dope, everything, and but you don't need a suntan lotion. So when the women take out all their dahoak, what they brought to eat together with, some will take out their dried tamkat, some will take out their okshuk. It's in a jar. Okshuk is a blubber with the seal oil, the fresh seal oil that's made. That takes about 10 days in your garage, at least in mine, that's what it is. And then the dried banyaktuk, and then maybe some greens from the previous year. And throughout the summer, we go picking on the tundra. And these greens are the most nutritious plants you could ever eat in your life. They're better, more nutritious than kale, more nutritious than those green leaves, spinach. And because I have to think in independent English. So when they're soaked in seal oil, that seal oil, if you have a teaspoon a day, it's better than having a medication from Norton Southern Health Corporation pharmacy. It will clean you of your cholesterol. And then the a half a cup of suet, a half a cup of willow greens in seal oil equals the amount of vitamin C of 5 oranges. So our people, we're very, very healthy from our own foods that we hunt, that we fish, that we pick. So every meat, we eat it with greens. We eat it with the different greens that we pick. After that, there's other different sorts of plants that we pick throughout the summer all the way to the berry picking time. So Kol Jirunga, what does that? Kol Jirunga, what does that mean? You become aware of where you are, who you are. And surat, what is surat?
Greens.
Adatni, what's adatni? Under. Kol jirunga, surat, adatni. Let me hear you say that. Kol Rirunga Surat Adatni. I started becoming aware of myself under the willow greens. You did it.
Thanks, Yayuk. We just met yesterday. We ran into her and Megan at lunch, and I think that's just one chapter in what should be a book from her. All right, so our next storyteller is going to be Charlie Lean. And these are his words, not mine. He's an older gentleman, although the term gentleman is subjective. He's the son of a true Alaskan bush family. And his alter ego, we heard about it this morning at breakfast, is the Bacon Grease Kid. And he can tell you all the uses for bacon grease after the show tonight. So let's hear it for Charlie Lean.
Hello. I guess I am tall. Anyway, my story is about my family and a Thanksgiving that we did. So first of all, you need to know that I'm a fourth generation Alaskan. I'm pretty proud of it and a fairly outdoorsy guy. And if any of you met my wife, she's more outdoorsy than I am. So we one fine winter about 2001. It'd been a pretty cool but low snow year, and we were thinking, gee, this would be the year to go out to camp for Thanksgiving. It'd be quite the place. We have a camp over at Ungolic, halfway between Koyuk and Shaktuli, roughly. And so we talked ourselves into this 5-day weekend we were going to do. Take the kids out there. They're young teenagers. I'm at the time a 45-year-old guy that, and question, you know, like teenagers question everything you do, and parents question everything teenagers do. And so I was telling the kid, you know, you need some Alaskan values, enough of this TV stuff, and we're gonna get out there and do this thing. So Wednesday before Thanksgiving, we got my buddy Jim Tweedo to fly us out, and we got installed out there. We had a cabin. So beautiful, you know, maybe ankle deep snow at the worst, and I'm gonna do a little beaver trap and show the kids something. Have dinner, be a fun camp out. And so we get there noonish. We pack everything up to the cabin about a mile from the runway. Probably not the best planning. I'm carrying a pack and a big old action packer. Quite the workout. I was not feeling quite up to snuff. Pretty, just not perfectly well. Been stressed out that year and a little work. So anyhow, we got all set up and it's still daylight. So went out and we set 3 beaver sets. It's something that I didn't have a lot of experience doing. I trapped a couple winters in a place where there were no beaver, but wanted to do this. I did catch other things. Now, actually made it pay. So, but anyway, we got the traps in, got everything set. The kids are going, gee, this is fun, Dad. So we spent the night, got the cabin warmed up. It takes quite a while to heat a warm or cold cabin. I woke in the morning and it's just pouring snow. Just, there's 6 inches of snow on the, where there was none the day before, and it's just piling up. We went, poked around a little bit, but it's just coming down. And by late in the day, there's 18 inches of snow on the runway. I'm starting to question my sanity for this, because too much snow to put a plane on that runway. So when nobody's looking, I get the sat phone and I sneak outside and I call up Jim. Hey, Jim, you know, lots of snow, and you think you'll ever get out here? And, oh, we'll figure it out, Charlie, don't worry. You know, he talked me down. It's no big deal. Well, I got a couple of skis or something. We'll figure out something. Okay, so go back in, put on the brave face, you know. Oh, yeah, this will be good, you know. And we decided we'd have Thanksgiving on a Saturday or on Friday because the turkey has to thaw. So I brought a little 12-pound turkey, and I thought I had everything, and got it all set up that night. We're in a camp. It's got a two-burner Coleman stove. It's got a little, like a cubic foot oven that fits on top of the burner, just right for making biscuits and stuff. But 12-pound turkey doesn't fit in that. And there was a few other, dishes were not as numerous as I remembered. And anyhow, went to bed, don't worry about stuff, just do it. And about halfway through the night, the trees are moaning and groaning, and get up and it's just howling outside. And the temperature dropped 20 degrees, it's 20 below, blowing 20. Good day to stay inside and cook, right? So we whip up. I decided, start throwing things around. I had biscuits that morning and made a big production and told the kids, this is pretty cool. And we're start to put together the turkey, and I got one biscuit left, and I forgot the bread, and no dressing. One biscuit, So there's a box of tired old Pilot breads, the kind 5 years old, the kind of you can bend and they don't break. Good stuff. So I had an onion that had frozen, but the see-through onions are still taste like onions, and the celery was kind of that way too. And I'm doing my best, and I scrounge around, and we had some old spices, and I just went, well, if it's old, it's double it, right? And I made stuffing and packed the bird full, and the wood stove just going full tilt, which was good because it didn't have an oven. So I put an upside down cast iron pan, a roaster on top of that, the turkey breast down in that tin foil, set the big metal dish pan over that to catch the heat coming off the side of the stove, and use the sniff test, so that's when it's still scorched, you do something fast, and flip the turkey when it smelled scorched and got it. And by the time it smelled scorched again, the leg was loose, and we figured that's good enough. And then we had a can of beans and the turkey dressing gravy, and I made a cherry cobbler with some Bisquick, and pretty good dinner, and if I do say so. And my grandmother always said, hunger makes the best sauce, and she is right. I have tried to make Pilot bread stuffing again, and not the same. So anyway, we better get going here. But I knew, that was a success, and we had leftovers the next day. Went out, checked my beaver traps the last full day we were there, and by God, I got one. So. And the runway had blown free, plane could land, my pride was intact, and it was a very successful trip, and I have great memories, and the kids tell me stories about it all the time. So thank you.
I had the privilege of having breakfast with Charlie today, and I think we might fly him down to Anchorage and just have him do seven-minute stories of the next Arctic entry. So 49 minutes of the Bacon Grease Kid. So our next storyteller is a guy who grew up in Kotzebue, and he always knew he wanted to move south, and he realized his dream by moving 150 miles south and being here in Nome. So everybody, make welcome Laka Peacock.
Well, actually, I have two stories for you tonight. They're both about the exact same thing, but completely opposite. And I hope that'll make sense when I'm done with the stories. So the first story takes place in Kotzebue. As like Sam here, I didn't realize he was telling a wrestling story, but I was also a wrestler. And we were cutting weight. We had a tournament in a couple of days. And at that time, I was ranked number one in the state, so it was really important, that I made weight for this tournament. And I was at my buddy Lance's house, and we were just sitting around. And talking, and all we could talk about was food. And we'd dream about food and talk about food, as Sam was alluding to earlier, and food, 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 what can we do? And so my buddy said, well, he had heard from his dad that there was this thing called X-lax, and that basically we could eat and lose the weight, like in a couple of days, we'd be fine for the tournament. I was really nervous, you know, like I said, I was like, well, I don't know, Lance, and if we don't make weight, our coach is gonna be so mad. So finally, he pushed me and pushed me. I said, all right, let's do it. So he went in the kitchen. He whipped up, I remember, scrambled eggs for sure. I remember we just ate tons of eggs, and he made all kinds of stuff. And we just gorged ourselves, and we laid on the couch, and we were so happy. We laid there, and I said, well, I got to get home. I got to get home. It's getting late. So he said, well, let me get the X-lax. So he gets the X-lax box and brings it out, and he reads the instructions. He's like, well, it says to take one, but I don't want the coach to be mad at us. We better take two just in case. I said, all right, whatever you say. So popped two X-lax and went home. When I got home, and my mom was a little bit mad that I was late, she said, hey, you know, tomorrow's the Halloween costume contest at school, and I've got this great idea for you. I'm going to turn you into a mummy. We're going to put white long johns on, and I'm going to wrap you in white tape, your entire body, and including your head and face. By the way, I forgot, if you can reach underneath your chairs and pull out the piece of paper, I almost forgot, underneath your chairs, a piece of paper, you'll see what I'm talking about here. This was me as a junior in high school. So I said, well, I don't really want it, but okay. So she said, next morning we wake up, and that's me as the mummy. Wake up, she gets my costume on, and I go to school, and partway through the, you know, the school day, I'm sitting in the classroom, and you know, my stomach starts to go, and right away I knew it was happening. I was like, oh no, this is not good. And I gotta go, ran out of the classroom, and I run to the bathroom, and I open the door, and I realize as soon as I get in there, I'm like, oh no. And I run back to the classroom. I'm yelling at my teacher, I need scissors. And so she doesn't want to give them to me. I'm like literally grabbing at her hand. So I take the scissors and I run back to the bathroom. And I run in there as carefully as I can. I'm trying to cut the tape without cutting my long johns, you know, because I got nothing else underneath the long johns. So I cut a hole perfectly and I sit down in the bathroom and I'm just sitting there. And everything went fine. I'm sitting there like, oh, good thing that pooping disaster just was averted, you know. And then I realized that the rest of the day I was going to be walking around in school with two holes cut in my my tape. So the end on that story. I only have 7 minutes, so we can start on the second story, which is very similar. So this next story took place in Skagway at the Chilku Trail. My entire family, there was like 7 of us and friends, were hiking the trail. And I need to preface this story with a prior tale from the Iron Dog. So with Iron Dog, you're supposed to bring with you 2 pounds of minimum food for emergency food. So as usual, my partner and I were running late the night before the Iron Dog race. We're out at the store, we're trying to get different things and the food, and I'm walking through the aisles and I see a 2-pound block of cheese. I'm like, perfect. We grab that, toss it in our emergency stuff, and we're off on the trip. So now fast forward to the Skagway and the Chilku Trail. Same thing, I'm not prepared again. Everyone else has all their stuff. I'm like, hey, I gotta get my food, you know? So I go out to the store and I'm walking through the aisles and, oh, 2-pound block of cheese. You know, this would be perfect, easy. Whoop, toss it in my backpack. And next day we take off on this hike, which is gonna be 5 days. And we're hiking like the White Horse or something. So we start off, first day goes great, hiking's fairly easy. Second day the hiking gets progressively harder. And, you know, we're eating, and I'm eating the cheese and crackers, and I have some other stuff, and I'm basically going through this whole 2-pound block of cheese pretty quickly. By the third day, I realize that the hike is getting harder, and I'm just not feeling that great, and I realize that I haven't gone to the bathroom in 3 days. And so I'm kind of getting worried, and I go to the outhouse on the third day, and I'm trying with all my might, you know, to do something, and it doesn't happen. So by the fourth day, we're hiking, still nothing. So now 4 days of hiking straight, fifth day, I mean, we're talking some serious terrain, trying to get into White Horse, still nothing. Every day I'm just going in and trying as hard as I can. So we finally get to White Horse, and we get to the train station to take the train back to Skagway, and in there, all they've got are these, I think they were Senka packets. They were like little packets, you know, and of powder, and that's all I could find. And so everyone's encouraged me at this point, by the way, my entire family. So I'm just start eating these Senka packets and, you know, downing with water and eating Senka packets. And so we get on the train and we head down to Skagway, and that night we all got dinner and I don't feel like eating, you know, at all. But all of a sudden it, you know, hits me and I go go to the bathroom, and little success lately. So, yeah, two stories about the same thing, but completely opposite.
We've learned a lot of lessons from that story. All right, our next storyteller is going to be Lisa, and Nome is her home. She's been here for 16 years, but came here from Colorado. And she loves all sorts of things, as I'm sure many of you know, art and hiking, and most importantly, spending time with her family. And she's got another food story for us, and probably because she says her husband is the best chef around. So let's give it up for Lisa.
Well, my story is about Thanksgiving. It kind of seems like a reoccurring theme here tonight, but of course there's a lot of food at Thanksgiving, so why not? And Thanksgiving is definitely my husband and my favorite holiday. It's just all about good food and getting together with people, no commercialism. And so over the years, it's just become this really great part of our lives. And but I want to tell you a story about one of our first Thanksgivings here in Nome. And we had just moved here and bought Jan Williams's old house. And so we had been there for about a year, and it was time for us new homeowners to host a Thanksgiving feast. So we decided to have a bunch of friends over. And Jan Williams's place had a house and then an attached a mother-in-law apartment. So we had all this space. We were going to set up our TV there, and it was going to be really awesome. And so our friends that we had invited were all young, as we were at that time. And so what do you do the night before a big holiday? You party, right? So they all were going to get together. And we decided, though, we were going to have friends with our we were going to have dinner with our friends Mike and Marcia. And so they actually lived in the old food bank, if any of you know where that was. But anyway, so we were having dinner that night before, and we had finished up and we're just having good conversation, talking about what we were going to do the next day for Thanksgiving and everything. And of course, Chip and I promised our friends we'd make turkey and all that. And Mike and Marcia start telling us this story about how they knew some people who like forgot to take out their turkey and it was frozen the night before and all this. And Chip and I are laughing. And then we kind of actually looked at each other like, did you get out the turkey? You know? And neither of us had gotten out the turkey. And we're like, oh, no. You know, bye, Mike and Marcia. We got to go, you know? So we went home and we're like looking at the back of the turkey like, oh my God, what do you do with a frozen turkey when you have to cook it the next morning? You know, is there any hope to this? You can't go to Hanson's, they're closed and all that business, and probably couldn't afford it anyway. So it says you could do this drip method. I don't know if any of you had to do that, but we stuck it in the bathtub underneath the faucet and just let the thing drip on it all night. And you can't get it too hot or too cold or whatever. So we're like freaking out because we never made a turkey. Everyone's coming to our house. We don't even know if it's going to be thawed or whatever. So, yeah, went to bed, just worried, whatever. Got up the next morning, did our business and everything, waiting for people to come over, just nervous how this whole thing's going to turn out. Well, the first friend of ours who wind up, who arrived first was Doug Stewart, and he came in his Cape Smythe jacket and his gray sweatpants, and he brings along, our friends were supposed to be bringing the dishes that accompany the turkey, right? So Doug brings cut up like sausage and little chunks of cut up cheese. And I was like, well, okay. You know, I mean, he's a bachelor. I don't even know if he knows how to cook or anything. So I can understand that. That's not that bad. Who cares? So he puts that on the table. We're watching football for a while. And then then our next set of friends came over, and it happens to be Tony Gorn. And again, he brings over like a dish of blue finger Jell-O. And I was like, okay, this isn't turning out so great. And our turkey, we don't even know if the turkey's gonna turn out. But in my mind, you know, I'm like, whatever. But then, you know, of course I'm like, oh, you know, finger Jell-O, sweet, that's cool, you know? And he's like, yeah, it's something, you know, we always make at Thanksgiving, it's our family tradition. I'm like, whatever, okay. So then the next set of people that show up are Kevin's wife, Will, and another Amy, Amy who was Angie's cousin. Anyways, they show up and they have these little, like, these little nasty pickles that were covered with cream cheese and a wrap of ham around it, like with toothpicks through it. And I'm like, really? It just, bummer, okay. Whatever, okay. So, but I'm nice, I'm never gonna say that to somebody, but I'm like, oh, cool, you know, little pickles, that's cool. But anyways, yeah, so, and I figure, you know, if you're a young person, maybe you think that's a pretty cool dish, having it all wrapped up like that, so. So then, let's see. So this is getting on about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Chip and I are still pretty worried if our turkey's raw in the middle, and, you know, we got all these whatever to go with it. And so I'm just like, okay, we have one more couple coming, and it's Scott and Corey Donovan. And I know Corey can cook. She's cooked. I've seen it. I know there's something good coming, and she'll save the day. And Scott can kind of cook too, so anyway. So I'm like, please, you know. So here comes Scott and Corey next, and Corey has one of those like Tupperware containers that has like the little, you know, individual things you can fill. And I don't remember everything that was in the 6 little compartments, but I do remember there was peanuts in one of them. Carrot sticks, which at least there was a vegetable, and then for real, there was candy corn in the other one. And you know, being after, you know, that was after Halloween, because you know, 2 weeks later, I was like, candy corn? Oh, you know, it's just, it's gone from bad to worse. That was our last chance right there. Obviously, this whole thing is ruined. I'm guessing the turkey's gonna be ruined as well. Just that's the luck we're having. So Chip and I went into our part of the house, again, that was separate from the mother-in-law, and we're just like carving up the turkey and saying, you know, we gotta pull this off. This is the only thing we can really eat today. And in the meantime, when we're like cutting up our turkey and stuff, our friends went out to their cars and got like all the real food and brought it into the table and stuff like that. So when we came back in, oh, thank God, there was real food there and a real good feast. And, you know, I just have to say, ever since then, we've continued that tradition. We invite whoever doesn't, you know, have family in town, like, you know, just anyone, come on over. The only difference is now we actually make sure we know what everyone's bringing ahead of time so we can kind of orchestrate the perfect dinner. But, yeah, we had a good laugh. We had good times and good memories now.
Great. Well, it's been 16 years. If you're at that dinner party, Lisa's still plotting her revenge, so beware. great story. Thank you. We only have one storyteller left. Can you believe it? It goes by so quick. And our last storyteller is a daughter of Gnome, which I think makes her a Gnomite, right? Are you guys Gnomites?
Yep.
Okay. I've heard Gnomies. I've heard Gnomans. But I guess she's a Gnomite. So she is an outdoors woman, and she loves to tell stories and make people laugh. So we want to welcome Marjorie Tabone.
Today. Pretty good? You know, all of my fun stories that I have, like in my memory of hunting stories, it always seems to happen when like, we're doing something illegal. Like seining a day after season's over, or catching a moose the day after, maybe, a moose season. So I decided maybe I should, probably shouldn't share those stories. So I decided to share this one of the perfect day. It was a day before I had to leave for my first year of college. And it was during moose season. And we had went out the day before and we'd seen a couple moose, but they were way, way far away. No way of us trying to get them. So we decided to go this day, the day before I had to go to college. And if we were gonna get anything, it was that day. And so we decided to go back out to where we had seen those moose before. And we started loading up the car. My dad started loading up out at camp at Cape Nome. And he started to put some fishing poles in there and a 12 gauge with birdshot. And I just looked at him and he just kind of looked at me and he shrugged his shoulders and he said, "You never know." Yeah, okay. I agreed with him and we got on all of our grub ready to go and we were on our way, probably around mid-morning, about 11 o'clock. We were driving down, cruising down, a just gorgeous day, this autumn day, And just past the Bonanza River Bridge, there's this really nice place where you can get birds. There's always a lot of good birds there and good activity. And right on the side, right on the right side of the road, there was this nice pond, and it was just full of teal ducks, little utugu. They're real teeny tiny ducks. And my dad, we started creeping up slowly, and we stopped. And they're still there, and Dad said, "You want to try?" And I didn't hesitate, because earlier that summer I had learned how to shoot a 12-gauge at my job, and I knew that it had a strong kick, and I was like, I could do this. I want to be a strong woman. I want to impress my dad. Yes, I'll do it. So I crept out of the car, I grabbed the 12-gauge, and I was getting ready, and I was sighting it in. And earlier that year I had I was also on the ski biathlon team, and so I learned how to shoot properly so that I wouldn't be all missing all over the place. And in that training, I learned that you had to breathe in and then exhale, get your calm down, breathe in again, and then on your exhale, you shoot. So I was aiming at the birds, and I was looking at them, I was breathing in, exhale, okay, this next one, I'm gonna do it. And right when I was exhaling, I was about to pull the trigger, the birds go flying, and I'm like, oh, shoot! And then shoot real fast, but because I kind of panicked a little bit, the butt of the gun wasn't next snug to my shoulder like it should have, and it just kicked back, and it got me really good. And I felt the sting, but I didn't really feel it as much because I seen just one little bird flying. And I was like, I got one! And it was my first duck. My first duck. Just a little utugu, little teal one. They're like this big. And we drove down. My dad was real proud of me. We drove down to the river, and we plucked it. And he was teaching me how to gut it. And as I was plucking and gutting it, I was thinking, who can I give this teal duck to? Because in our traditions, you have to give away your first catch. And so I was like, oh, all these elders that are thinking in my head who I wanted to give this duck to, just little offering. And I thought, Jacob Awonona, he will like my duck. So we pack it up, we're ready to go, we move on down to Solomon. There's this nice little place where you can kind of drive in, and there's a river there, and we've seen some red fish swimming in there. So we're like, let's try fish. So we got our fishing poles. We were fishing for like 5 or 10 minutes, and Dad got one on the hook, and we got real excited. He's like, yeah, come in. Pulled it in, nice silver. Right when he pulled his in, I had one on my line. I was like, yeah, I'm ready to go. It's fighting really good. It's, you know, really fun. He's going out, going back in. You know, we're just playing this game of fishing. And we reel it in, and it's this nice, beautiful king salmon. I want to call it a king salmon. I'm saying it's this big, but it's probably about this big. But for the purpose of our story, to make it awesome, it was this big. And the reason why I say it was king, because it had spots like a king salmon, but it had the body of a silver salmon. So we just go ahead and we just said, it's a Jack King, my first king. I got my first teal duck, and I got my first king on this day. Awesome so far. We get it up. Those kings, the salmon at the time, they were really red, and those are really good for smoking. So we were super proud of that moment. Packed up our stuff, and we kept driving back to where we were the day before, looking for those moose. And we were cruising down this old mining road that we were on, just past Solomon, at about 6 miles an hour. Oh, come on, Dad. 6 miles an hour, cruising down, looking up, looking around. We must have been driving for about an hour or so, and at 6 miles an hour, I mean, you can't really go very far. We were just cruising down, and we were just like kind of just chit-chatting, having a good time, and looking out, and then I was looking at the scenery, and we just turned this corner, and there it was. On the top of this little hill, this little mound, there was a big bull moose. And because of my lack of experience of hunting and my excitement, I just was like, shouted at the top of my lungs, moose! My dad was like, shh! And it heard me. It heard me because it kind of looked at us like, what was that? And we thought at that moment it was just going to run away. But the strangest thing happened. It looked at us, and then it just turned broadside to where it has a perfect shot. And it stayed there. And my dad was like, you want to shoot it? And I was like, in my head, I was like, if I shoot it, it's gonna be my first moose and I'm gonna have to give it away. Nope, I don't wanna shoot it. So I did it, and I was like, you can do it, Dad. And he was like, okay. So he grabbed his gun, he's aiming. I could hear it hit it, but it didn't move. It just kind of like, what was that? And then it just stayed there, and Dad's like, oh, try it again. Did it again, re-aim, hit again, and then it kind of just stood there, and then it dropped. And that was like the most exciting time. We got the moose, yay! And after we realized, after we got done with our excitement, it wasn't a little hill, it was like a mountain. It was like covered with bushes, you have to go through bushes, there's this little gully, you have to go in, you have to go up the hill. I tell you what though, after we got done butchering the moose, it was and packing the moose and getting it all up there, down the hill, up the gully, through the trees, into the car, it was like the best, most exhausted feeling I've ever felt in my entire life. Because you know that you have packed something that's gonna feed families. And you knew that this was an effort that was gonna be cherished by multiple people. We packed the moose. We came back home into town, or back to camp. We got back just after midnight. And then we put the moose already, the meat outside so we could prepare it the next day. And 6 hours later, I was on a plane to my first year of college in Fairbanks, proudly wearing my blood-stained sweater, showing people, nonchalantly, of course, proudly wearing the moose that we had gotten on our perfect day out on the land. Thank you.
Let's have one more round of applause for all seven of our storytellers.
Great, and thank you guys. Thanks for coming on out. I hope you enjoyed the show.
Thank you to the Nome Arts Council and Lorelei Ivanov for allowing us to record this event and broadcast it as a Story 49. A big thanks to Matt Rafferty and everyone with Arctic Entries in Anchorage for coming up to Nome and hosting such a great community event. And a big thanks to you for joining me for this episode of Story 49. My name is Kristen Loeffler, and I hope you'll tune in next month. Story 49, sharing your voice, your story, your Alaska.